God's world. Not just globally, overseas, but even right here. Even right here in your own backyard. Alright? And before that, let me just, you know, I don't think I've shown you guys, like, just the life that, that we lived. My wife, Alice, and I, and we have two boys. Joshua, he's in 8th grade. Jonathan, he's in 5th grade. So let me just show you a little bit first of our life being a missionary out on the field.
Do you want to enlarge that, or how you want to do it?
Oh, no. I forgot to activate this. Okay. Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for reminding me of that, Pastor Gary. I'm a little bit absent-minded sometimes. All right. So let me just show you very quickly, right? So we were church planters in Asia for 12 years. So, okay, right now this is where we live, in Houston, Texas. Actually, Sugar Land, Texas. Okay, that's a suburb of Houston. And this is where we lived. I won't tell you exactly where, but this is where we lived for 12 years doing church planting, okay? And this is when we first arrived at where we used to live. This was our vehicle. This was our car. It's my wife and me. I had a three-wheeler. I mean, I could ride a bike, but, you know, I just had a three-wheeler so I can haul some stuff. And I'm not too sure why my wife has a trash bin on her head. Don't know why I have a laundry basket on my head. Don't ask me why. I don't remember. When we walk in and out of our apartment, this is the friendly faces that we see in our apartment complex. And this is inside of our apartment. Well, one of our apartment. I mean, we moved four times. And we would always try to invite local friends over to our home to have meals. And wonderful time to just get to know people. This was the corner of our apartment. As you can see, there's buses, there's cars, there's a lot of bicycles, and nobody's paying attention to the rules of the law of the traffic. And this is a very common sight, right? You have all these nice cars, but then you also have farmers from the countryside just riding their little mules, pulling their little wagon. And this is a very common sight. You see people recycling plastic bottles. They put it in their three-wheeler, and they stack them up. They really stack them up high. And here's my wife. When we were moving from one apartment to another, this is our moving van. That's our mover right there. And, you know, we also did community development work. You know, just working with people that's down and out. We worked with farmers in the countryside. So this is one of the kind of like the private elementary school for migrant workers in the city that we lived. Now, when I say private school in our part of Asia, their level of education, academic, is very low, much, 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 much lower than the government school. In that part. So, yeah, we did some community development work. My wife is in the middle right there. Our older boy at that time, he was so small at that time. But the food was good. I mean, the food was yummy. I mean, there was like delicious stir-fried food wherever you go. Let me see a show of hand. How many of you guys have ever tried eating... It's not. Did you say salmon? No, it's not salmon. It's a rice field snakes. Raise your hand if you had those before. What? I can't believe it. Okay, so three of you guys have had rice field snake. I didn't really like the taste of it too much. How many of you guys have tried scorpions? Raise your hand. What? The same guy. Where are you from? Okay. How many of you guys have tried horse hot pot?
Horse hot pot.
What? Whoa. Okay. All right. All right. Now, maybe I shouldn't show this picture. All right, I'm going to skip this picture. How many of you guys have tried frog legs? Raise your hand. See, more people. Yummy. It's delicious, right? Yummy. How many of you have tried fried grasshopper? Raise your hand. Man, it's so delicious. Fall. It's really good. Huh?
Crispy.
It's crispy. Yeah, it's got to be deep fried.
Nutty taste.
Nutty taste. Okay. All right. How many of you have tried deep fried larvas?
Yeah,
huh?
That's a
wow. Not my favorite. So most of my time where we lived in Asia, I would travel to the countryside. I lived in a city, but I would travel to the countryside maybe once a month, sometimes twice a month, because we really try to work with farmers and just really sharing the love of Jesus Christ with farmers, such as this village right here. Very picturesque, very beautiful. This village is made out of wood. It's made out of bricks, some of those villages, and there's even villages made out of stones, if you can believe that. Just stones that they just shape and fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. It's really amazing what they do. The people group that we work with, they're mostly rice farmers, as you can see. Except a lot of the younger people, they're not even there anymore. They're out working in the factories. But still, there's a lot of farmers still in the countryside. And how many of you guys like to get a haircut? Raise your hand. Well, not that many. So you wouldn't want to get a haircut here, right? So praise God that you can get a haircut in the barbershop rather than the place like this, right? The people there, they're pretty superstitious, so they would... Am I in the way? Maybe I should move over here, right? Is that okay? The people are pretty superstitious. A lot of the folks, the older folks and the middle-aged folks, they worship rocks, mountains, you know, rocks like these. They worship the spirit world. And they also worship their ancestors. In the villages, in every single village, the entryway, you see spirit houses, little spirit homes like this. So it's a pretty dark place. It's a pretty dark place. They need the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the village, there's animals everywhere. This little baby cow, this boy riding on the water buffalo, and this Mr. Pig. Such a lazy pig. Kids everywhere. Kids everywhere. This little girl is in the back, is on her mom's back. There's kids on the side of the roads. There's so many kids on dirt path that I walk through. There's so many kids. Kids with their grandmother, and kids on the side of the rice field. There's just so many kids in the village. There's even kids going skinny dipping in the river all over the place. Here's their mode of transportation. The most popular mode of transportation is the motorbike. I don't know if you can see very clearly. How many people's on that bike?
Four.
There's four. Two kids and... No, actually three kids and one father. So that's a very common sight in the countryside. This is their taxi. It's a three-wheel taxi. Here's a friendly farmer on his three-wheeler just hauling his crop. And this is the kind of bus I would take going to the countryside. And it just kind of looks like that. My wife and I, well, every now and then we'll take this small little van. It's called a bread van. It's a really small van. We don't like taking it because this is what happens whenever we take these vans. They really pack it in. They just pack it in. It's not very comfortable. Everybody walks in the countryside. Everybody. How many of you guys like to walk?
I don't know.
If you don't like to walk, you're not going to enjoy living over here. So let me just show you a few pictures of the very first time I brought my older boy to the countryside. Let me see. Yeah. So my brother, older son, he's up in the top bunk, and my little boy is on the bottom right there. He was 5 years old at the time. Okay, so that was the first time I took him to the countryside on one of those countryside trips that I took. So that's him, so excited the night before because they had to go to bed early because we had to wake up early. So my wife, she cooked a big breakfast for us. And so he was just so happy, excited to go with his dad. So we took the city bus to a bus depot. And then at the long distance bus depot, we took another bus to the countryside. Well, to a town. It's about a 6-hour bus ride to that town. So there was Mr. Chicken inside that bus. And when we finally got to town, it was a long trip. So my son was really tired. We still had to take a taxi to go to a village that a friend that I know in a village. The road was dirt road. Now it's paved. Now it's paved. But at that time, it was still dirt road. And the taxi driver actually didn't want to go any further up the mountains, so just told us to just get off. So we walked another 1 hour to the village. And we finally got to the village, my friend's village. And here's some of the village little friends that my son got to play with. And yeah, this is my friend starting up a fire in his village. His wife is preparing dinner that evening for us. So yeah, here's another Mr. Pig. Why did I put this picture? Oh, I put this picture because it's kind of unusual place to put an outhouse right next to the pigsty. So I just thought I took a picture of that. I don't know why. I'll show that to you. Yeah, Mr. Horse, so many animals in the village. So, yeah, this is my son with some of his little friends in the village. So that's just kind of give you a picture of what we did in those 12 years. Just a little glimpse of what we did. Just sharing the love of Jesus Christ to those that had very little opportunity, if any, of hearing the name of Jesus. And so today, yeah, we're going to learn about the six ways of reaching God's world. So let me start this. So the reason why I want to share this with you guys is because when it comes to missions, and when I say missions, I'm talking about missions reaching out, sharing the gospel to people overseas, but also right here in Raleigh-Durham area. And when it comes to missions, not just a few of you, not just some of you, not even most of you, but all of you, all of us should be involved in reaching God's world. All of us. And there's six ways to reach God's world, right? There's six ways all of us can do it. Let me give you a quiz first. So, true, false. In 100 AD, actually for some of you who are here on Friday, in 100 AD, the ratio of unbelievers to believers was 360 to 1. Today, the ratio of unbelievers to believers is 7 to 1. True or false? Raise your hand if it's true. Okay, raise your hand if it's false. Okay, right. All you guys were listening on Friday. Yeah, it is true, right? It is true. How about this? There are more evangelicals in Africa than all of North America and Europe combined. How many of you guys think it's true? Raise your hand. How many of you guys think it's false? That's not true. That's not right. Right? It's actually true. It's actually true. Many Muslims around the world are having dreams and visions about Jesus Christ. Is that true? Raise your hand if that's true. Some of you guys think that, no, that can't happen. No way. It's true. It's actually true. Paul. Yeah. That's true. Well, why did I ask all those questions? It's because, you know, God is at work. God is at work in our world. He's been at work. And even if I am not involved to reach God's world, it doesn't matter. God's still working. God is still working. Now let me ask you some more questions. True or false? Between 85 to 95% of all believers who are serving as cross-cultural workers, they serve in areas that already reached. How many of you guys think that's true? Raise your hand. Think it's true, right? Okay. How many think, nah, I don't think so. Yeah, two hands, right? Well, it's true. It's actually true. There are about 2.5 billion people. There's another quiz from Friday. See if you guys are paying attention. There are about 2.5 billion people in the world who have very little or no access to the gospel. How many of you guys think that's true? How many of you guys think that number is too big? Nope. Yeah, it's true. Now, more than 30% of the world's 6,900 plus languages need a written translation of the Bible. How many of you guys think that's true? How many of you guys think that's not true? Yeah, it's true. Yeah, they're all true. You guys ever take those SAT tests? If you don't know, just answer it all the same. Anyway, don't take my advice. The task is still unfinished. What I'm saying is the task is still unfinished. God is at work. But we still have our job cut out. That's all I'm saying. And, okay, the world, our globe. What's the population of the world right now? 8 million. 7.3 billion. I hear a lot of sevens. Yes. Seven point something. Yeah. As of April 2017, this year, the world reached 7.5 billion people. I don't know what it is right now, but in April, 7.5 billion people. And from a missionary point of view, you know, our world can actually easily be kind of divided, segmented into three almost equal parts. Okay? Almost three equal parts. Because basically, one third or 2.5 billion people in our world, they will call themselves Christians. They could be Catholic, they could be Christian, evangelical, Eastern Orthodox, could be a cult, right? It could be a nominal Sunday-going Christians. Christians, people who profess belief in Christianity, 2.5 billion. There's also roughly 2.5 billion non-believers. These are people who decided not to believe. They just don't believe. Even though they may have a Christian friend, even though they have a church about a few blocks away from their home, even though there's Christian TV programs, Christian radio stations, bookstore, they just don't want to believe. They don't believe. Or maybe they just really haven't had anyone ask them to consider it. 2.5 billion. That's a lot of people. And there's also 2.5 billion people who are non-believers. But not only that, they are unreached. What that means is they don't know of any friends who are Christians. They don't know of any relative. There's no church nearby, near them, that they can even go to if they want to find out what this Christianity is all about. 2.5 billion unreached people. Is that a lot of people? Yeah, that's a lot of people. I mean, let me give you a visual example. If you were to just line up 2.5 billion people, stand them shoulder to shoulder, just line them up, okay? 2.5 billion people. This line will go right out that door and it'll circle around the globe and make a round trip back to RCCC. And then it'll go around the world again, a second time, back to RCCC. And then it's going to go around the third time, round trip to RCCC. And then it's going to go around the world 17 times before we have the 2.5 billionth person lined up. Is that a lot of people? That is a lot of people. I don't know about you, but man, that's not okay. That's not okay with me. Yeah, I'm sure that's not okay with God. And that's the reason why, while God is still at work, the task is not finished. There's still a remaining task. So here's our world again, and I talked a little bit about unreached, right? And when it comes to people groups, I just want to make sure that everyone knows what I mean by that. So when I'm talking about people groups around the world, I'm basically talking about just a collection of people that share a common culture, language, and or a sense of identity. You know, kind of like what's your ethnicity? But even more specifically, what's your ethnicity? What's your sub-ethnicity within your ethnicity is what I'm saying. There's over 16,000 different people groups in our world. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. So many languages, so many cultures. Unreached people group, well, that's just basically a people group that do not yet have a real local church among them that can sustain itself without outside assistance. That's basically what an unreached people group is. There's still a lot of them that are unreached. There's over 6,000 of them. Oops, sorry, you probably can't see it. It's so low. There's still over 6,000 unreached people group. Most of those over 6,000 unreached people group can be found in this area right here in the world. Maybe some of you guys know it. It's called the 1040 window for us missionary geeks. Most of those unreached people group could be found in that window. Not only that, but most of the world religion can be found in that window. You look at North Africa, the Middle East, that's a Muslim area. Central Asia, Muslim area. India is a Hindu area. You're going into East Asia, it's a Buddhist area. And even parts of Southeast Asia is a Muslim area. Most of the world religion could be found in that window. Most of the poor can be found in that window also. I'm talking about abject poverty. I'm not just talking about just normal, everyday poor people. I'm talking about abject poverty. There's a lot of abject poverty in that window there. Basically, about 2% of the missionary resources and the funds go to that window, whereas the other go to the rest of the world, right? So obviously there's a little bit of an imbalance, right? Maybe you guys know that already. And I'm not trying to advocate to reduce that 98% and move some of that to the 2%. No, I'm not advocating that. I think we need to keep that 98%, maybe even increase it. All I'm saying is, we need to increase that 2%. Keep on supporting. Keep on praying. Keep on sending workers to that 98%. But I think the body of Christ, the church, can do way more than that 2%. Way more than that 2%. And so how can we get involved? Everyone should be involved in the remaining task. Everyone. And as I said, yeah, there's six ways. There's six ways to reach God's world, right? So as you can see, there's learn, there's pray, there's go, there's send, there's welcome, there's mobilize. It's not rocket science, right? It's not rocket science. It's pretty straightforward. Let me just start with learn, right? Oh, by the way, do you guys have that handout of all the six ways, the different practical ideas to stimulate your thought as to things that you can do right here in Raleigh-Durham? Okay, you guys have that. Learn. Everyone can do that, right? I know that you guys, for many of you guys, are very highly educated. You guys can learn. You guys can learn about the needs of the world. And there is too much resources out there. There's just so much resource out there that you can learn about our world, about the needs of the world, the spiritual needs. Let me just give you just a short list. How many of you guys have heard of the Perspective Course? The Perspective Course? Okay, not many of you, right? Man, the Perspective Course is a 15-week course that introduces a person to the world of missions. And what they can learn biblically, as well as historically, as well as strategically, what they can do in missions. I've never met one person after taking perspective course in which their life was not changed. I've never met one person yet. That's a wonderful course. You could just Google perspective course. JoshuaProject.net, OperationWorld.org, PeopleGroup.org, OMF.org/US, Operation World, Global Prayer Digest. Your own missionary. You can learn a lot about missions just through your own missionaries when they come back on furlough. Listen to their stories. I think almost, well, most missionaries that I know, they love to share their story with the people at church. They love to. And they're just waiting for people like you guys to ask them to share. And so, kind of like, help them to help you, right? Help them to help you. Ask missionaries to tell their stories so that you can also learn. Because the more you learn, the more that you'll be able to pray. The more that you'll be able to pray for our world. And I don't think I need to convince anyone in this room. Prayer really is the most important work of missions. I don't think I need to convince any of you guys of that. Prayer is the most important work in anything that we do in this life. And missions is no different. There's this old missionary, J.O. Fraser. He was a missionary to the Lisu people way back 100 years ago, turn of the century, 1900. And so he was a missionary to the Lisu people of Yunnan province, southwest China, by the border of Burma. And Hudson Taylor sent J.O. Fraser to that area to reach the Lisu people. He said this about prayer. Christians at home can do as much for foreign missions as those actually on the field. I believe it will only be known on the last day how much has been accomplished in missionary work by the prayers of earnest believers at home. I believe J.O. Fraser knew what he was talking about. Hudson Taylor sent J.O. Fraser to the Lisu people back in around the 1900. And for the first 6 years, very little fruit. Only a handful of Lisu people professed belief in Jesus. And unfortunately, those handful of professed believers, they eventually went back to their spirit-worshipping ways. How discouraging is that for a church planter like J.O. Fraser, right? He was so discouraged that he felt like writing a letter of resignation submitted to Hudson Taylor. But before he did that, he thought maybe he's going to write a letter to his mom back in England. So he wrote this letter to his mom. And he asked his mom, please pray. Please pray for these two people. Doesn't seem like none of them are that interested. Well, when J.O. Fraser's mom got the letter, she immediately got a few of the people in her church, formed a prayer circle, regularly, frequently prayed, standing in the gap on behalf of these Lisu people. Shortly after that, J.O. Fraser baptized 129 families. Not people, families. 129 Lisu families. These families went on to preach the gospel to the surrounding villages. Fast forward 100 years later, today, these same Lisu people, they are a Christian people group now. Over 50% of the Lisu people in Yunnan province are followers of Jesus Christ. They are even sending out their own people to preach the gospel in other counties. In fact, in other provinces. Even cross borders into Myanmar, northern Thailand, Laos, Laos. They are just on fire for the Lord. Prayer is the most important work of missions. Is that right? And we can all do that. We can all do that here. What about go? When we think of the Great Commission, I don't know about you, the first thing that comes to my mind is to go. Right? To go. To go and make disciples of all nations. And, you know, just look at this. There's 60 workers for every 1 million tribal people. That's kind of like the people that I served. People that worship the spirit world. Animists. 2 workers for every 1 million Hindus. 12 workers for every 1 million unreligious, atheists, or maybe in the communist countries. 6 workers for every 1 million Muslim. 13 workers for every 1 million Buddhists. To kind of put it into context a little bit, my town, Sugar Land, Texas, there's 88,000 people, right? And there's about 70 registered Christian church in Sugar Land. So then I'm thinking to myself, maybe let's just say on average there's 2 pastors for every church. I mean, there's some churches that are huge, mega church, but I'm just going to say every church has 2 pastors, okay? A pastor and a children's pastor, let's say. So that's 140 pastors serving 88,000 people, right? So if you do the math, what's the math? What's the number? Did I write that down? I hope I read it. Idiot. Well, anyway, I think you get the picture, right? Yeah, I think it's what, 300? No, 600? 1 worker for every 600 people? Yeah. You can check my math on that, all right? That's to kind of give you a little bit of a context. Jesus said the harvest, and I'm going to add one word. The harvest is still plentiful. But the workers are still few. So, I think if you're healthy, I think many of us should try short-term trips, short-term mission trips. If you're healthy, I think many of us should go. And I really feel a few of you need to go long-term, or even for 2 or 3 years. And the church needs to be behind a few of you that God is calling to go. Not everyone is called to go. I understand that. Not everyone should go. But a few of you need to go, need to consider that. But I'll tell you what, if you're not called to go, that's okay. That's okay, because then you are called to send. If you're not a goer, you are a sender. Okay, what does that mean? It just means encouraging, giving logistical help, giving prayer, giving finance, and just advocating on behalf of the people that you're sending, missionaries, right? Sending is so vital. It's so critical. If you don't have senders, you don't have goers. It goes hand in hand. We were goers for 12 years in Asia, and we have, presently, we have 7 churches and 70 individual families sending us, supporting us, praying for us. There is no way we can do what we're doing without those precious 7 churches and 70 families that prays for us, that every now and then sends emails to encourage us, especially when we're sharing that we're struggling with some stuff. Obviously, the finance is helpful too. Otherwise, no money, we can't do stuff. Welcoming, right? Never in American history, never in world history, have there ever been a time in which you can do cross-cultural ministry to unreached people without ever leaving your town? So many internationals, immigrants, refugees coming into so many U.S. cities. I was just hearing about some of the internationals in your own town from Sioux in the missions committee. What a wonderful opportunity for you guys to, you guys are doing it already, but to continue and even to build upon welcoming people from other land, some of whom probably have never heard the gospel even once, probably. I'm telling you, God is bringing the world to America, have already been doing so for many years already, and even more so. Sometimes, if you want to know where to get started, RCCC is already doing some stuff already. You can join what RCC is doing. If you want to innovate and create and maybe figure out another avenue, one thing to do is just look at your own map. And you know, this is the map of Houston, right? And when I was locating all the Buddhist temples throughout the city of Houston, and I was locating all the mosques all throughout Houston, and when I was locating all the Hindu temples all throughout Houston, it literally filled the map. It literally filled the map of Houston. There's so much opportunity to go out there and to pray around those places, to pray around those areas. I did a little bit more research. Even as I went to Global Prayer Digest, May 2011, now the title is "The World is Coming to Texas." It really is. It really is. Just look at this short list of all the unreached people just coming to the city of Houston. The Libyans, the Arab Iraqis, the some of these names I can't even pronounce, the Nepalis, so many. The opportunity is so ripe right now. This picture right here, well, it just shows the 10 top non-Christian countries in the world in terms of population, in terms of the sheer numbers, right? And since my burden is for Asia, I mean, I'm looking at the Asian countries, the top 10, China, Japan, Indonesia. Now, that's not surprising, but Vietnam, wow, that's pretty surprising. They're in the top 10 in terms of numerical non-Christian population. That's surprising. But look at the map again. Do you see a startling large red circle on a particular country? The USA, right? How can the USA have such a large red dot? I thought we're supposed to be a Christian nation, right? But when you look at the population of our country, there are so many people who still need to receive the love of Jesus Christ, the gospel message of Jesus Christ. And of course, last but not least, mobilize. Really, all mobilizing is just encourage, encourage, encourage. Right? If you're able to convince your friends to check out this latest video games, you're able to get in to just play with that, you can mobilize. If you're able to get your parents to take you to Chick-fil-A rather than a Chinese restaurant, you can encourage and mobilize, right? Mobilizing, all it is just encouraging people to be involved to reach God's world. You know, I'm a missions mobilizer, and so I try to encourage people to consider missions, right? But you know, when it comes to your friends and your family members and your church members, the best mobilizer is actually not me. The best mobilizer is actually you, right? And so when I'm talking about mobilizing, that's all I'm talking about. It's just encouraging the people that you know. And to get them to go with you to participate, to be involved in mission. That's all mobilization is all about. That's all it is. And so, and so yeah, I want to be able to leave some time for some Q&A also, because I know I gave a lot of information out to you. I don't know if you guys might have questions, but at the same time, I want you guys to also think about, and well, it says write down, but you don't have to write it down. I want you to think about two specific ways that you could practice in any of the six ways for this next 12 months. You can look at that list of yours. And I want you to think about, the reason why I want you to think about it, but you don't have to write it down right now. The reason why is because Sue has a survey for you guys to write down during the service. Okay? And what you can do is, if there's one or two specific, I hope two, If there's two specific ways that you feel that you would like to practice in any of these six ways, please write it down in that survey sheet that Sue is going to pass out during the service time, okay? Because then the missions committee could be able to see it and could be able to serve you guys and can be able to see what can be done in practical ways of what RCCC can do to be involved to reach God's world, okay? But before you guys process and think about it a little bit, I'll give you a little bit of time. Is there any questions? Any questions? Any concerns? Any thoughts? Yes, sir.
How did you get started in all this?
You mean like like going overseas and being church planner? Wow, yeah, that's a very good question. I'm trying to say it as concise as I can. I don't want to take up too much time. Basically, it all comes down to this. People encouraging me from my parents, they were missionaries also, to an elderly retired missionary. He was a missionary to Indonesia when I was a single young adult fellow. And he kind of took me under his wing, just spending time with me, telling me some of his stories on the mission field. I didn't even know he was mentoring me. He was just hanging out with me, that's all. And I just found it so interesting, his story. I've always thought about, should I do what my parents did as missionaries? I kind of didn't want to do it just because I knew the life was a little bit difficult looking at it from behind the scene as a missionary kid myself. But at the same time, I could just really see my parents and just the devotion, the love that they have for the Lord. Even as they went through quite a bit of rough patches. And then just to be able to hear those stories from this elderly retired missionary, all the stories that he shared of his time in pre-communist China, and then when he got kicked out, he went down to Indonesia, continuing to serve with OMF. Wow! I just thought, you know what? Maybe I need to just be available for God. If he wants me to go overseas, maybe I need to be available for that. If he doesn't want me to go overseas, I'm sure he'll make that known to me very clearly also. I just need to be available. That's all. So that was kind of like a little bit of my story. So I made myself available. But it was a 10-year process. 10-year process before, from the time that I made myself available, fast forward about 10 years, that I actually committed to OMF. To OMF International, like I was serious to the point of committing to a sending agency. Of course, being sent by my home church. So, I just have a heart to, I just love talking to people from other lands. Maybe it's because as a missionary kid, I'm used to talking to people from different cultural backgrounds. I feel that's more natural for me than talking to someone similar to me. Ironically, that's a little bit strange, but I am kind of strange. But I just enjoy, when I was working as an engineer, I just really enjoy talking to my colleagues from Lebanon. Another colleague, he's from Nigeria. There's another colleague of mine, actually he's my supervisor, he's from Iran. He's Persian. And my supervisor, is from Japan, right? I just love talking to those people. I really got along well with a lot of the people in my work from other places, from other lands. So I guess all that in combination. God made it very clear to me that I was going to go. And it was confirmed to me by my church. It was confirmed to me by my church. I was not going to go unless my pastor, my mentor, the people that knew me well, gave me that affirmation. So that was very important for me also. Yes?
Are you able to still keep in touch with those that you were serving back in China, like the farmers? And
every year.
How do you do that exactly?
Yeah, well, every year. So we came back 3 years ago, and so doing mission mobilization for 3 years now. But every year, I would travel back. I would travel back to Asia, and I would visit just about every believer that we spent time with and trained and discipled and so forth. So, just interacting with them, encouraging them, praying with them, listening to them, not really giving too much training. It's limited. I don't even live there anymore. And so, but I can just be there to just encourage them, pray for them. We have teammates, well, former teammates. They're there already. They're the long-term presence right now. But I go there, and they're all happy to see me, and I'm happy to see them. And we just fellowship together, worship together, pray together, share heavy hearts together. There's a lot of struggles, a lot of challenges. But, so yeah, yeah.
So would you write letters to them in the meantime? I'm assuming they don't have, like, internet access, but would they write a snail mail?
Actually, I just call, depends. Some people, I just do, almost all of them have smartphones, even in the countryside. So what I would do is I would send, like, those text messages and things like that to theirs. So sometimes we interact like that. Sometimes I would just call them. I would use Skype, right? And I would put money into Skype so I can actually dial their cell phone numbers, and I could just easily talk to them. Almost like as if I was just right around the corner. So I just got to beware of the time difference.
And then finally, you also have to be careful thinking you may be monitored either on the Skype or through the...
Always. Always, always. So I don't say anything of any church planning nature. I don't say anything. But we do talk about, I'll be praying for you. How are you doing? You know. But nothing of ministry nature. But just what one believer would say to another believer. You know, one friend to another friend. It's okay to say all those stuff. I'm praying for you and things like that. Any other questions? By the way, Pastor Gary, what time am I supposed to end?
10:45.
Wow, you guys got a lot of time. Come on, what's the questions? Yes, sir.
How big an obstacle is the government in the country?
Yeah, it's tighter. It is tighter now. Supposedly, it goes in cycles. Like in the 12 years that I was serving in my part of Asia, when we first arrived, it was actually pretty relaxed. It was pretty open. And we thought, wow, that's not that bad. We can share with a lot of people the gospel. Doesn't seem like it was that restricted. But then it got really tight. It got really tight, probably 3-4 years going into our term. It was quite tight. We really had to be cautious. We had to be careful. Many people were kicked out. And then it got loose again. I said, oh, it's not too bad. Not that bad, but then immediately, like 1 or 2 years after that, it got tight again. And it's been tight since then. So, but you know, the church is growing. The church is growing, even in the midst of restrictions from the government. I'm kind of wondering if those restrictions have actually fueled the growth of the church. Maybe not particularly in my area, but maybe in other provinces, in other parts. Absolutely fueling the growth of the church. So much so that the churches on the other provinces that are growing so quickly, they're actually sending some of their workers to our part of Asia, partnering with our teammates. Unbelievable. But only God can do something like that. So yeah, there is restrictions.
What was your cover over there, if you can tell you what it was?
Well, yeah. What I'll say is this. There's so much opportunities. There are so much opportunities to serve in many parts of the world, in our parts of Asia. Yeah, it's a creative access country. I will never say it's a closed access country, because no country is closed to God. But it is a creative access country. We need to be creative. There's so many opportunities that you can find to serve. Let's put it that way. I've worn three different hats in the 12 years there, doing three different types of work while still doing church planting work on the side. And it was good. It was all good. There's actually plenty of opportunity. The challenge is deciding which opportunity fits your heart. That's actually more of the challenge. When we first went to Asia, we went with absolutely no plans, other than we wanted to serve an unreached people group, number one. And number two, we had to learn the language. So the first 2 years, we just focused on learning the language. But at the same time, we were checking out different teams, different sites, different opportunities, different workplace. We had plenty of time in those 2 years while we were learning the language to figure out what we were going to do in the long term. Well, maybe not long term, for in the foreseeable future, because it always changes where we are. But anyway, whatever that we can do to stay in country, that was actually less of an issue, because there's so much different avenues to be able to stay in country. So, okay. Yes.
Can you share with us your experiences when you first started called deputation?
The deputation. Oh, like raising support, yes, building a team of prayer warriors. very good question. I want to try to summarize it in one word. It's basically relationship. Relationship. Because our most faithful ministry partners, we call them ministry partners. We don't even call them supporters or anything like that. They are our ministry partners, because they share in our ministry, whether it's through prayer, whether it's through efforts of emailing us, whether it's through monitoring giving every month, whatever the case may be. But it all stemmed from relationship. Of the 70 families that supports us individually, I would say a good majority of them, maybe 60 or so of those families or individuals, either knows me, knows my wife, or knows both of us. Those seven churches that supports us, my home church in Los Angeles, our home church, Houston Chinese Church in Houston, Alice's church that she went to when she was going to University of Texas at Austin. These churches have some relationship with us, some connection with us. But it all started because there's that relationship that we developed and built over time. So it's all about developing relationship and sharing in the ministry that God has given to us. And then we ourselves making sure that we can be transparent and updating the things that we do for our prayer partners. That's also very important. And being proactive also when it comes to deputation.
Follow up to that. So are you saying that it's much easier to go out when you're married than single?
I don't know. I've never gone out as a single. I've only got...
You imply you and Alice, right?
Yeah.
Easier to raise support.
Well, also...
because it's Alice and I, our budget is also higher too, right? So when you're single, you don't have to raise as much. But when you're a married couple, the expense gets a little higher. And then when you have kids, it's even higher. So, but you know what? God will provide. God actually is going to provide. That's actually, there's several ways, but that's one way that God can confirm to your calling, is when He provides, is when He will provide. There's a quote by Hudson Taylor that he said, all of God's work, whatever it is, will never lack God's supply. And so, it's an exercise of faith. So anyone that's interested about possibly going through this process of going overseas, deputizing, raising support, not a comfortable process. It's sounds a little bit daunting. Wow, that's a big figure to raise, more than I thought, right? But He'll provide. He'll provide. Not just for us, for our colleagues. The stories that we hear from our colleagues is just amazing. It's just amazing. Like, I guess we're not going. We've been deputizing for over 2 years. We're still only about like at 45%. Because at OMF, we had to raise 100% before we can even go. So, maybe this is just not for us. All of a sudden, within a month or two or three, this is a very common story. They're at 100%. God provided. I hear that story over and over again from my colleagues. So, and that really grows your faith. You cannot help but for your faith to grow and to really appreciate Jehovah Jireh, our God that provides through that. So, yes, Tracy.
I'd love to know the strengths that God has given both you and Alex, so as you're working together, like how you complement each other and reach different people.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, God has such a great sense of humor. And I'm sure all the couples here can maybe say the same thing, how God just brings two people so differently to somehow like each other and to the point of actually getting married, right? No different for Alice and I. Alice is just a social butterfly. She loves people. She loves interact with people. Me, not me, I'm not very friendly. I don't like to talk to people. Just want to be by myself. I'm an engineer. I just work by myself. But I love talking to international people, though. So we're just so different. I'm very step by step as an engineer. I analyze, I critique, and things like that. Where she's not like that at all. But she's very big picture. She's actually very big picture. She's actually very visionary. I really appreciate that about Alice. I'm not. I'm just focused on details. But when she gives that big picture vision, I think that's a good idea. I wonder how that's going to work. So, that sense, yeah. She brings a lot of people into her life, and then I'm able to join in and interact with that interaction, building relationship with local people, with local believers. So, I really appreciate her. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes? No. Go ahead.
Is teaching English in China still one of the easiest creative access means to the gospel?
Yeah. I think anywhere in the world, just about almost anywhere in the world, English is one of the more popular ways to just interacting with the local people. It still is. Yeah, it still is. English is still a valuable language for many of the world's population. Even in the countryside. Maybe less so, but still. They still ask for that. So, for example, we've hosted four English camps. in the countryside, in the junior high schools. And these are pretty fairly, they're not abject poor, but they're fairly poor. And yet they still ask for English camp for their junior high kids. In fact, Elder Don's daughter, Cindy, she was in one of those short-term teams helping us teaching English. She was definitely by far the most popular teacher amongst the junior high students, by far. We tried to get Cindy to to come again the following year. But she was busy at that time. you want first?
How long does it take you to be able to learn the language and speak the language?
Well, first of all, now I'm going to give away where I serve, right? But I kind of knew that language.
In general, it's like when you come in and then until you're able to speak the language fluently.
Oh, okay. Well, I was able to speak pretty well after 1 year because I had some background. But for someone who is starting from ground zero in a language, it usually takes about 2 years on average. Some people's faster. Some people are gifted. Some people are not. But on average, about 2 years before they can actually just talk regularly. Maybe not at academic level, but just everyday level, 2 years. Yeah. So after 1 year, I felt comfortable. I actually was able to freely converse with local people. It helped that because I work with countryside people, their language it was actually not that high either. So actually my language was about the same level as theirs. And maybe that's why I was able to connect well with them. We just kind of basically spoke at that same level of language. So depending on your ministry, if you're focusing on rural people, you don't really need a ton of language. You really don't. Yeah. Of course, if you're working in the campus with academic people, with business people, it needs to be a little higher. If you're going to teach theology, it needs to be a little higher. Yeah. Yeah. Did you, your hand was raised? Yeah.
So going back to the teaching English class, I think back to people like a Gladys Aylward who truly listened to the Lord and against what all man said, went solo, right, to China and did amazing things and pretty much didn't have, like a supporting agency or a whole bunch of group of other Christians that went with her versus nowadays, people are very intent on meeting with a sending organization or teaching English agency that would have that creative access already established in an area. In that case, is that something that you recommend where it's better to go with a supporting agency versus, well, bottom line, you still need faith. Let's say God's calling you to do something solo. I would imagine there's also wisdom principles. Going solo and just trusting God every step of the way. I'm just going to walk into a village and start asking, anybody want to learn English versus a specific agency?
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think there's so many different ways. So many different ways to express the gospel message in words and in deeds in so many varieties of ways. Whether it's to maybe be a tent maker. I guess you would say go solo, be a tent maker to teach English on a full-time basis. Maybe the person knows a university or a language school that they got connected with and they want to hire foreigners, actual native English speakers, right? And so, that's happened before. People have done that before. I've even met people in that situation. And of course, there's the more traditional way of being sent by the church with the mission agency. And so, of course, that's also another way. My personal experience, this is just only my own personal experience from what I have seen and witnessed, is for the people that went solo, and I know a few of them, in the end, like, for example, our agency, OMF, and not just our agency, other agencies too, I found that these solo folks really needs fellowship. They really need people to have soundboard, to express some thoughts and ideas. It's lonely. It's actually lonely. It's because it's not like America, right, where there's a lot of support, a lot of people with support, friends who are believers. There's pastors and mentors and disciplers, and there's books that you can get, you know, for any kind of issues that you're grappling with. There's so many wonderful books and authors. And even then, people here struggle. Even then, people here still struggle, right? And can you imagine with so much less, right? So I have found from my experience, these solo folks still needed a community of people like-minded to him or her. That we just, well, we feel so bad taking in a few of these folks. Eventually, not all, but a handful of them eventually applied for partnership with OMF, meaning they just pay a small little fee, but with that partnership relationship, they still maintain their tent-making status. But and so they don't receive any support through OMF, none whatsoever. It's just through that school. But then they partner with OMF, and so they get to attend our meetings, our fellowship, whatever. Even our field conference, they're welcome to come, and so forth. So I find that's what I found. I don't know what other missionaries' experiences. That's just what I saw. I would encourage folks who are interested in overseas work, unless you have a actual platform from your work or from another work that you know very well, and you know the stability of that work, unless you have that, I would really, personally, in my opinion, be sent, not solo, but with your church. Be sent from your church. And even preferable if your church can be able to partner with a mission agency to send that person. It's very complex for most church to do 100% of the sending. It's very difficult. Even though the local church is responsible to send. The agency is just the arm of the church. We're just tools. We're just the resource. It's the church that sends out missionaries. So, oh, wrap it up. Okay. We're going to wrap it up. And you mean wrap it up right now, Pastor Gary? Do they have time to think? Or maybe just go straight to the service and they can think about the two practical things, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you guys do some thinking for about... I don't think you have any time to think. I think it's time's up, right?
Yeah.
All right. Just think while you're in the service, okay? Think about two practical ideas and please write it down on the survey sheet. You know, Sue, you will make Sue very happy if she can see all of these beautiful creative ideas. And she's going to really try to implement them, okay? So write them down.